Welcome to CYC Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. When we work with children, youth, and families, who do we serve? The young people we work with, the parents of those young people, the agency that employs us, the bodies that fund us, the community we are part of, and what happens when these various parties come into conflict? Whose agenda do we follow? This becomes particularly relevant when facing issues of inequity and social justice. Often the agendas can be in direct conflict. For example, zero tolerance policies in schools and racialized students, or sexually active youth and faith-based shelters. Today we're going to explore the relationship between youth and adult allies, particularly as it relates to issues of injustice. My conversation today is with Dr. Hava Rachel Gordon. Dr. Gordon is an associate professor of sociology and criminology at the University of Denver. Her work focuses on the social construction of inequality such as gender, race, class, and age, social movements, and schooling. Her current research is on community struggles over urban school reform and is the subject of her upcoming book, This Is Our School, Race, Resistance, and Community Struggles Over School Reform. Hello, Hava, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I want to jump right in here. You are based in Colorado, based in the U.S. What are some of the justice issues that young people are facing in Colorado in particular and the U.S. in general?
I would say some big issues in terms of job insecurity and underemployment, rising tuition costs for higher education, and growing student loan debt are some big issues, I think. I think over the last decade or even more, we've seen a turn of public education towards standardized testing and also school reform experimentation in many urban areas in particular. And I think that's hit many young people pretty hard.
How has school reform impacted young people?
Well, you know, I think school reform has rightly sounded the alarm bell over the quality of education in the United States. But I think it's also put schools under the microscope and scrutinized schools, and the stakes are really high. So that especially in urban areas, schools that don't produce adequate results might face closure or reform or staff turnover. And I think in the name of increasing academic achievement or scoring high on tests, we've seen a lot of students' education disrupted. And I study some of the response to that.
I want to talk about the responses. Before we do, you're an educator. I'm an educator. Is it not a good thing to have accountability in the school system? Is it not a good thing to be striving to have educational reform and effective ways to measure the impact of education?
Absolutely it is. And I think some of us who are critical of urban school reform, the contemporary era of reform, I think we run the risk of falling into some nostalgia about the past. And certainly schools have always been unequal. And we've always seen, you know, great disservice done to especially low-income students and students of color. So for sure, accountability has been a good thing in that sense. I think where it goes awry is that we might not fully examine the core issues of the achievement gap, for example, or the growing instability of students' lives in their neighborhoods. We're not necessarily looking at the root causes, which is growing inequality in terms of income and wealth and issues of gentrification and economic instability. I think all of those bigger social issues don't necessarily make their way into some of the contemporary reform rhetoric. And that's where the problem is. To just focus on testing and to just focus on teachers in particular, I think misses some of those bigger causes.
And so a more comprehensive school reform would bring in those larger core issues around instability, income inequality, gentrification, economic factors from your perspective?
Absolutely. So I think it would necessitate a much broader movement, or perhaps a broader coalition of many movements combined. That go beyond schooling.
Right. And you've been working in a variety of these areas and addressing these things. What are some of the mobilization efforts that you've seen coming from young people?
Well, there's so many responses, I think. I see some young people organizing, for example, I'll tell you, actually, I've looked at student organizing in Portland, Oregon, and in Oakland, California, and in Denver, Colorado, and there's been a variety of student organizing around educational justice issues. So, for example, students organizing to have a say in who their school nurse will be, because especially in low-income areas, the school nurse might be the only medical care you might receive. Mm. And it's important for students to know their nurse and to have a good relationship with that nurse and know that nurse is there. Other students I've seen organize around just getting their bathrooms unlocked. In Oakland, for example, I spent time in schools where the bathrooms were locked all day because there was not enough custodial support to keep the bathrooms clean throughout the day.
What did students do?
They just hold it. They just hold it. Or else the bathrooms are unlocked and the bathrooms are so dirty that the students feel like they can't use it. And that's right there, a dimension of state divestment, from public education. That's a core issue that we need to address. And so students kind of organizing around bathrooms, clean bathrooms, as a justice issue. We might say that's, just kind of taken for granted basic right, but in many schools we don't even have clean bathrooms. And if you can't go to the bathroom, you can't really embrace your education.
Yeah, it's hard to think when All you're thinking about is I need to go to the bathroom.
Right, exactly. And in that same vein, there are students organizing around healthy food in their schools, getting healthy food in their schools, or having breakfast available throughout, an entire district or across an entire state as state law to make sure breakfast is served in all schools. So those kinds of core issues, I think, have been important touch points for students. I've seen other students, organize to have student unions, for example. So even spaces in schools where maybe adults aren't present, where students can get together and talk about issues that excite them, that are important to them, and strategize on how to argue with administrators on changing their schools. So lots of issues. And in terms of school reform, I see students organizing to have a say in teacher evaluations so that, it's not just teachers being evaluated by their peers or by administrators, but that students get a say in the quality of teaching they're receiving. But then there are also, student responses to school closures under ed reform. And so, when a school is closed and a community doesn't want the school to be closed, but the district decides it must be because it's failing, we see students walking out in protest over that. So a large variety of issues.
When we're talking about student mobilization, it sounds amazing. It sounds powerful. It sounds inspiring to me. And I wonder, what is my role then as an educator? What is my role then as a youth worker in those moments?
Yeah, that is a good question, because I think students tend to be a little more radical than adult allies would like them to be. And I think adults can play a variety of roles as allies to students. In terms of, student walkouts, I know that often they might join with teacher unions, for example. So you can see really important coalitions between students and teachers kind of sharing the same stake in keeping their schools open or having a voice in school reform. I think I write more about the social justice nonprofit as one particular site where adult allies are really important. So I think adult allies serve a really important role in in educating students about social movement histories to kind of give them justice perspectives that they may not receive in school.
And would these be, sorry, go on, for example.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just for example, you know, teaching about, you know, the histories of the civil rights movement and young people's role in that, or the farm worker movement, or, you know, how movements have been built cross-racial coalitions. I think this is a kind of education that is necessary to sustain student activists, but that students don't have access to in their usual schooling.
And does that come from the students, or does that come from adults who say, I think it's important that you understand this historical perspective?
Right. Typically, that would come from adults, I think adult allies. From my look at youth activism, I think that's one of the biggest strengths that allies can bring, is some of those social movement legacies.
Hmm. Could we just take a step back for a moment? And when you say adult ally, what are you meaning by that idea?
Well, that's a good question, because I think adult allies can come in a variety of forms. I think in terms of youth activism, there's consistently younger adults that play a really important role in shaping young people's, or I would say even adolescents' political capacities. And usually these are young adults who have maybe experienced teenage activism themselves, and they've been exposed to social justice kind of education, maybe in college, and they come back and work with younger youth. I think those youth in particular, I would say like young adult allies, are really critical for young people's political consciousness. And they also are closer in age, which I think is important. So I really do believe that there are ways that young adults can be allies in, and relate to younger people in a way that maybe older adults can't.
And when we look at the role of ally, often I think of ally, you know, so for example, there's an ally working in disability community, the role of the ally is to take direction from the, you know, not supposing that an individual who's never lived in a wheelchair knows what it's like to live in a wheelchair, right? That in social justice movements, allies take direction from community members. Is that your sense that that is the same model when we're talking about youth adult allies?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's quite the same. In some ways it is, I think. I think a good adult ally will kind of take their cues from the ground up. So listening to youth and what youth are concerned about and kind of hearing their critical perspectives on the world and shaping a campaign around that is really powerful. But I think in so many ways, you know, the whole realm of politics is the gatekeepers are adults. So if youth want to impact policy, for example, I think they really need adult allies to be there at the table with them to facilitate that discussion between other powerful adults. And if, especially if we're talking about marginalized youth, youth of color or low-income youth who often don't come into contact or don't have a kind of a horizontal communication with an elite policymaker, it's really important to have an adult ally there to facilitate that discussion, I think.
Otherwise, A, they won't have access to the decision makers, and B, they won't have the capacity to communicate with them?
I think so. Yes, I think both of those are true. And C, because it's so easy for elites to write these youth off, I've seen young adults play the role of kind of prying open space in the conversation for young people's voices to enter the debate. So, for example, you know, in terms of education reform, I noticed that a lot of policymakers talk about ed reform in a colorblind way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes don't talk about, you know, racial disparities in test scores or in resources for schools or even in discipline policies. You know, maybe there's racial disparities in terms of expulsion and suspensions. And it's important that I've seen youth of color especially kind of enter those debates and say, wait a minute, the larger issue is racial discrimination. And I've noticed in my own school, we have a security officer who constantly harasses my friends and me, but I noticed that officer never harasses the white kids, for example. And it's really important to, I think, for policymakers to hear that challenge from youth. And I think young adult allies might play that role in prying open that space in the conversation for young people to say that, to speak to their own experience.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Following on that, what happens if an adult, for example, notices those disparities and the young people don't particularly notice those disparities? Do you think it's the role then of the adult to say, hey, look, you are being targeted, you are being marginalized?
Absolutely. So that's true. I think there are a lot of ways that adult allies can take a young person's experience and then put a larger frame on that and say, actually, what you just experienced, you know what that is? That ties into this larger pattern. See, and this is the rate of suspensions of, you know, black boys, for example. And your experience fits right in there. You know, what do you think of that? What should we do about that? So I think it does go the other way, that an ally, and again, it gets back to that education piece, that an effective adult ally can be a really good conduit for a social justice education.
And do you believe, I'm struggling with this idea of my role as a youth worker, child youth care practitioner, an educator. Sometimes, you know, I'm a white man, I'm cisgender, you know, sometimes I don't think it's my place. And I've been challenged by this, particularly by some people of color who said, absolutely, it's your place, right? If you're seeing inequity or an injustice or you know, racism, it's absolutely your place to bring awareness to the individual who's experiencing that, even if they don't see it. And I struggle with that. And what I'm hearing you say is absolutely that is part of my role.
I would say yes, indeed. And that brings up a great point that adult allies can also be advocates for youth voice when no youth are present. And also, I think perhaps underscoring that some social issues are youth issues too, and reminding adults of that as well. You know, like in discussions of gentrification, for example, you know, that impacts youth and youth have a particular vantage point on that. And it's important to bring their voice in even if they're not at the table. So I think adult allies can do that for sure. And I think the bad models of this in some ways are when we consult with youth as representatives of youth on youth issues, maybe what we would call youth issues. So for example, you know, maybe, I don't know what we might think of as distinct youth issues, like discussions of busing to schools, you know, or transportation. How do youth access public transportation to schools? Or, you know, something having to do with schools, but we often don't consult youth on other issues when we don't think it's a youth issue. And I think that's where the model might go wrong. And I'm thinking in particular of youth councils, for example, where adults might be the gatekeepers of kind of picking students to be representatives or consultants on youth issues, but they don't involve student voice or youth voice on other issues that we think of as just grown-up issues. 'Cause really all the grown-up issues are also youth issues. You know, issues of war or economic development or housing or urban planning, those are also youth issues. So maybe that's kind of getting off on a tangent, but I think a good adult ally will also recognize and remind other adults that young people have an interest in this discussion too.
Certainly. And I would say young people also need to have the capacity. You know, I've seen too many situations where, you know, young people are brought into an adult space, around a youth council or a youth representative on a council, and they're not given the support and the skills and the all that sort of stuff and the language, and it's boring.
Right.
And so the young person is like, oh, this is torturous, right?
Right.
And how do we work in those sorts of spaces, or is that something that you've looked at?
No, that's true. It is boring. And I think also in those spaces, youth are brought in as this token voice, but they don't even have voting power, for example. They're just this advisory. So I think one thing is to, in those situations, those governing structures, to incorporate youth voting power into that space, where maybe that youth representative might hold the same kind of power that other people do. Or, making sure that adults are invited into youth spaces. And that's also where, the nonprofit structure has been really important, I think. The youth organizing, for cities lucky enough to have some kind of an infrastructure for youth organizations, to have policymakers visit young people's territory instead of young people going to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you looked at all, outside of youth organizations and schooling? So I'm thinking of places like group homes or shelters for street involved homeless youth, or psychiatric hospitals. And I'm wondering what a adult ally's role is in those sorts of contexts.
Yeah, that is an excellent question. And really, most of my research has been on more the youth social movement kind of organization or schools. But I think there's always a place for a youth voice in every institution. And maybe an effective adult ally is someone who opens up conversations about how the young person sees that institution and how they would identify the major problems and identify some solutions. And that would be the beginning. I think there's no institution that couldn't benefit from a youth perspective on their own, where they're at, and it would make it better for young people. And institutionalizing that youth voice would also be important.
Absolutely.
So could a youth be on a board of directors, or could a youth, or a few youth, occupy some kind of position of authority in that, or voting power or something, or consulting even. But I think that would be really fantastic if some of those institutions could integrate youth voice in a more formal way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. You wrote a chapter in a book called Youth and Inequality in Education, Global Actions in Youth Work. Your chapter was called Radical Possibilities and Mahdist Reforms. I highly recommend the chapter. I mean, that's what motivated me to reach out to you, and I highly recommend the book. In your chapter, you discuss some of the limits of adult youth ally relationships. Can you speak a little bit to what you found or what some of your concerns were about the relationship?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I've noticed in my research, a lot of research looks at community-based organizations or social movement organizations that are geared especially towards organizing youth into political campaigns. A lot of that research looks at the importance of those organizations in changing young people's political consciousness and empowering them to take action. But what I noticed is that in a lot of these organizations, it's the youth workers that actually become kind of disenchanted with their work. And it's those very youth that used to be youth activists themselves, that maybe have gone through college and that are coming back to mentor younger youth. It's those youth workers, I think, that are kind of strained in those organizations. And so that's what the chapter is about in many ways. So I look at a few examples of youth organizations who are trying to get young people involved in getting more active in shaping school reform policy, specifically, around teacher evaluation or around, reducing the racial gap in discipline policies, or the school-to-prison pipeline. And I notice in a lot of these organizations that the young adult workers, the staff members, the organizers who are organizing younger youth, they give so much to these younger youth. You know, they teach them about social movement histories, and they help them get a seat at the table with policymakers, and they give them advice on how to craft their critiques so that adults will listen. But then they kind of also are beholden to the grants they receive, which, you know, more and more nonprofits are, you know, reliant on grants, and those grants always comes with strings attached. You know, you've got to show, you know, a certain number of youth you've developed into leaders, or you have to show how many members you've recruited, and a lot of it is quantifiable benchmarks. And it really burns out, I think, these staff organizers who are kind of pulled between the grant mandates and what the base of their youth want to accomplish with their kind of newfound political capacities. So I see a lot of youth workers actually burning out in some of these organizations. It's a little troubling, you know, and it also could be because maybe the pay is low in these nonprofits and the work itself is not sustainable. But when I interviewed these youth workers, they had a much deeper story than that. And they talked about their reluctance in getting youth at the table with powerful adults, but then the pressure of keeping those youth at the table and kind of toning down youth dissent a little bit so it's not so scary and not so offensive. And they become, you know, reluctantly kind of repressive agents, you know. They start to curb that very youth radicalism that they nurtured before.
And they curb it ostensibly in order to maintain a seat so the young people can stay at the table.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think in terms of school reform, you know, school reformers who want certain reforms, they know that their reforms are unpopular with communities. They know they are being criticized as well, especially when you have like a school in a neighborhood shut down, or, you know, half the teachers are fired, or new principals brought in and no one, you know, had any say in who she is or who he is. And so reformers also want some legitimacy from community, you know, communities. So they want allies in the community. And I think especially when reformers say they're doing their work in the name of youth of color in particular, to close the achievement gap, it means a lot when youth of color can be at their table and youth of color can align with them on certain goals. And so they want the youth at the table, and the youth organizers want the youth at the table. But I think that kind of that at first what's kind of holding policymakers accountable or what's maybe confronting them kind of turns into this weird partnership over time. And it requires young people to kind of tamp down their outrage a little bit, or maybe some of their radicalism, and speak in a way that won't alienate their, you know, these policymakers.
And have you found any ways for, or have any insights for adult allies to not burn out or to maintain the seat without feeling like they have to become some sort of, you know, movement chaperone?
Wow, you know, that's a great question. You know, I can think of a few organizations that are clear with adults in power that they are not doing their bidding, you know, that they are there not necessarily to be collaborators, but that they're always there to hold them accountable. And sometimes they might agree on issues, but other times they are there to sound the horn and, you know, kind of expose that person in power if they go against, you know, something they said they would do. And so the best youth or adult allies and the best youth organizations, I think, try to maintain that their role as being accountable or holding people in power as accountable. Instead of kind of jumping in and being so excited that maybe youth might, you know, be this permanent partner in some kind of venture. And once you think of someone as a permanent partner, then you're less able to conflict with them, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. What's our role? And if you're an activist, you're concerned about an issue, holding people accountable is part of your role. That's
right.
That's well said.
That's right.
As we wrap up this conversation, is there anything else that you would like to speak to?
You know, I think I'm thinking about your question as of allyship and mm-hmm. how that might look different between adults and youth versus other kind of social justice perspectives. And I think sometimes maybe adult allies feel so confident in being adult allies because they themselves have been youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might think about youth as you know, this life stage that's temporary, something we've all been through. And so we almost have a false sense of expertise. I think that can kind of mean that our intentions are good, but that make us not very good allies mm. because we don't necessarily listen to young people's specific concerns or the specific realities of their life. And certainly this generation is facing a different world than the previous one did. So I would urge adult allies to also, think of youth not necessarily as a developmental stage, but also as a population that's that has their own set of institutional and structural constraints that are different from adults.
Mm.
And keeping in mind that ageism and adultism are real isms, you know, even though young people will eventually transition out of that stage, I think that's still a major axis of power in our society.
Yes, I completely agree. And I think that's a really nice way of framing adolescence, childhood, youthdom, mm-hmm. as a, you know, as a separate community, a separate culture that, as much as I hate to admit it, I've long left that community. It's not, you know, I'm not part of that community.
Right.
And the community that I lived in was a different community than it is now.
Yes.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, Hava. This was a great conversation. Lots of stuff. My mind is on fire right now, and I feel like I've thrown a rock and it skipped over, you know, 20 different concepts, which I want to try to think through. So I really appreciate you taking the time and the work that you've done. I think you do some really lovely. I've been able to read a variety of your writings over time and since coming across your chapter, and I think you do some really excellent work. So I really appreciate that work as well.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.